This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Irish writer William Trevor isn't famous in America, but he does have many readers here, and they tend to regard him with near reverence. Stephen Schiff profiled Trevor in The New Yorker a couple of years ago. Schiff wrote, "Trevor is probably the greatest living writer of short stories in the English language." Schiff described Trevor as a mild man, retiring and soft-spoken, famously shy. And Schiff observed that almost nothing about Trevor suggests that he could possibly know anything of the throttled romances, blistering humiliations, and freefalls into madness that rack his characters' lives. William Trevor has a new novel called Felicia's Journey that deals with delusion, madness, and murder. Trevor grew up in the south of Ireland, where much of his fiction is set. He moved to England as a young man, where he's lived ever since. He told me that as a child, his family moved around a lot.
We moved around simply because my father was a bank official, and every time he got promotion, the practice was to move the man who got promotion from one town to another in order to put him up a step. I don't know why that was the practice, but it was, so that we lived in seven or eight small Irish towns during my childhood, because he was actually quite a clever and able bank official, and he was rising slowly to the top of his profession, and we all went with him, of course.
Was there anything all the different towns you lived in had in common?
The different towns?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they were all very similar. I think having in common is an understatement. They're almost interchangeable, some of them. They're very, very similar places. As my father advanced, they got slightly bigger and more important, because he was obviously being given a more important job. But it does mean that I have got no hometown, which I rather regret. They're all my hometown, and I even towns in Ireland where I haven't lived, I feel belongs to me somehow or other, because I feel so very, very strongly a provincial, small town person.
What do you think a hometown would give you that you don't have?
Well, a hometown, I suppose, would give you a kind of coziness, which I don't have. But I'm rather glad, from a writer's point of view, I was speaking personally just then, from a writer's point of view, one shouldn't really have that cozy feeling. A writer is, at least this writer is, an outsider. And I feel outside society, and that coziness of belonging is something I would be very, very suspicious of and wary about, and really wouldn't want to have in the end. It's fiction writers are much spikier people than that. They're beady-eyed and watchful, and you can't do that from inside. You've got to do it from outside the pale, and I feel that I belong outside the pale. That maybe is why I don't live in Ireland.
In a recent memoir, you wrote a little bit about your parents and their unhappy marriage. You described them as victims of their innocence. I wanted to know if you could elaborate on what you meant by that.
Well, I think that my parents, when I said victims of their innocence, all I meant really was that my parents didn't know an awful lot. They were simple people. They didn't know an awful lot, first of all, about each other before they married each other. They didn't know an awful lot about marriage. And I suspect they didn't know an awful lot about love. But they married, and they seemed a very attractive young couple. My father was a handsome man. My mother was very beautiful. But they were the last two people on this earth who should have married. And we three children grew up with that like a cloud hanging over us almost every day of our childhood, which was a fairly gloomy household at times.
What made them so wrong for each other?
Well, I think that one of the things that made them so wrong for each other, in a strange sense, was that they were both very humorous people. My mother had a good sense of humor, and so had my father. But their senses of humor didn't meet. They laughed at different things. The world seemed to both of them a rather different place, and what was amusing in the world to my mother was not amusing to my father, and vice versa. Now, that may seem a very small thing, but I believe that that's an enormously important thing in marriage and relationships, that if you laugh and are amused at and find interest in the same things, you get on. If you don't, somehow or other there's a blankness on the other face when you make a joke or tell a story. And I was always aware of this with my parents, and that was one of the areas of life which I think was very difficult. There were other reasons why they didn't get on. My father was a jollier person, in a sense, than my mother was. He was a more social person, more gregarious person. And also there was the very difficult problem of moving from the towns we've been talking about, from one town to another, which was hard on my mother, but rather nice for my father, because he was advancing in his career, he was doing well, he was making more money, he was able to exert more influence locally and all that kind of thing, whereas my mother was presented with some really rather nasty house which she had to have repapered and repainted. And each time that happened, there would be maybe 6 months of upheaval. And this is not easy for a woman.
My guest is William Trevor. He has a new novel called Felicia's Journey. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Back with Irish writer William Trevor. After college, you moved to England. Did your Irish background feel different to you in England than it had in Ireland?
Oh, yes, I didn't want to leave. And the one thing I didn't want to do at that time, this is about 1952, the one thing I really knew is that I did not want ever to leave Ireland. I wanted to be in Ireland all my life, and I hated the idea of exile, but it was necessary and I had to do it. Now, of course, I see that I probably would have never written anything if I had stayed in Skibbereen all my life, or Mitchelstown, where I was born. You have to travel in order to see Ireland in perspective.
I think for about 15 years you worked as a sculptor before you started to write at all. Did you realize you had a gift for writing before you actually started to write?
Well, I was good at English. I was one of those boys, one of those children who was, you know, good at English at school, not good at anything else very much, but I did happen to be good at English. But then I became very interested in sculpture, not painting, but I became interested in sculpture because it just so happened that the art master was a sculptor. And I was a sculptor for a long time. I didn't make very much money. I seemed always to fail to make money when I was young. And I had to, in the end, give that up and get a job writing advertising copy, which I did for a couple of years.
Could you remember for us any of the ads that you wrote?
I can't remember any slogans or headlines. It's a question I'm always asked, and I'm always glad to say I've forgotten them all, because they were no good. I was very bad at it.
Gee, so did that hurt any confidence you thought you might have as a writer?
Oh, no, not at all. No, it's a different, it really is a different thing altogether. The good thing about writing advertisements was that when I went to that job, I wasn't given very much work at first, naturally enough, because I was a novice. And I had a great deal of time on my hands, and I was given a typewriter and endless cups of tea. And, you know, in those days, they would say, write an advertisement for a brand of paint or something, but you take your time over it. You know, you take 2 days to write that advertisement. I say, what do you mean? 12 lines? 2 days? And they say, yes, because it's got to be good, you know, and it's got to be absolutely right. Well, of course, I would write what I could in a couple of minutes and then put it aside. And then I began to write short stories because I had nothing else to do. And that's how really I began to write.
So what were the subjects of the first stories that you wrote?
The subjects of the first stories were, there were stories, I think that the only thing they perhaps had in common is quite a number of them were about elderly people. And I can't really tell you why that was. I wrote a novel called The Old Boys, which is entirely about elderly men and one woman. And I wrote a number of short stories about people who were in their 70s. And I think that the reason I did that was that I was curious to know what it was like to be very old. I was myself in my early 30s. Now that I'm closer to 70 than 30, I write more about children because, of course, I have forgotten in all sorts of ways what it's like to be a child. But When I stopped writing about the elderly, I wrote a great deal and have since written an awful lot about women, because I am not a woman and I want to know more about women. I write all the time out of a sense of curiosity. That's what drives me, as far as I can see, to write.
Well, you're how old now?
66.
66. So you're still not at the age that you were describing, but you're closer to it than you were in your 30s. Do you think you came close in your descriptions from what you can tell now?
Not bad. Not too bad. All sorts of things I didn't know about, which certainly not in those early stories, kind of perhaps not enough emphasis on the loss of memory, which all old people have. But they're not bad.
You know, even in your memoir, a lot of the memoir is actually about other people you've known or about places that you've been. Your memoir is filled with portraits of others. I get the impression you really don't like to write about yourself very much, that there's two things working here. One is your curiosity of others, and another is a reluctance to explore yourself in a public way.
Yes, I have very little interest in myself. I'm sitting here talking to you, whom I can't see, and I am more interested in you than I am in what I am saying to you. I am one of those people who, for some reason, is interested in other people more than in himself. And I don't know why that is. I don't know whether it's part of being a writer or whether it's just part of being a human being. I have absolutely no idea, but it's there, and I don't reject it. I use it. I use everything in order to write something.
See, that's interesting to me, because I think so many writers are very obsessive people, and usually one of the things they're obsessed with is themselves.
I'm sure that's true, but I'm not obsessed with myself. I'm obsessed with my friends. I mean, I'm very fond of my friends, and I'm very fond of my family, and they seem to come first, and I trail along someplace behind. I don't know. On the other hand, of course, talking like this, one has to say that all fiction is autobiographical in a sense, because it's autobiographical in the sense that I can only write about the physical pain that I feel. I can't write about the physical pain that you feel, because I don't quite know what it is like for you. It's like saying, when I see the color blue, I see the color blue. You may see a slightly different color. So I have to use as a yardstick my own feelings of pain, distress, happiness, everything else. Those are all things which I've experienced, and that experience goes into the characters I write about. So that there's always that autobiographical strand in everything. But it's almost a technical thing. It's almost using myself as a piece of litmus paper.
Do you think of yourself as an interesting person?
Well, not particularly. I would much prefer to hope that people found what I wrote interesting than that they should find I am interesting. I think that what people get when they meet a fiction writer is the remains of someone, because the bulk of everything in that person has gone into what he has written, or in the case of a painter, gone into what he's painted.
What are you working on now?
Well, I always work in the same way. I work on short stories and usually a novel at the same time, so that when the novel gets into difficulties, or when I become tired of this particular part of it, or, you know, whatever reason, I can just drop it and begin a new short story. And it's a luxury for a fiction writer to be a short story writer and also to be a novelist. I think of myself as a short story writer in the first place. But to be a novelist as well is a luxury, because I can turn to another craft, because they're quite different. The two crafts are quite different.
How are they different?
Well, you can, with a short story, you can see around it. It's like when having something in your mind that you can sort of see almost in the round. You can sort of see to the end of it, although in fact you may change the end. The end may be quite different, and you may begin it at a different place, but you can see much more of it when you begin it, before you begin it, and while you're writing it. With a novel, you can't do that at all, at least I can't. I mean, everything I say is personal. It's purely the way I write. Other people's would be quite different. But with a novel, I find that to be able to see round a novel and to be able to see a complete novel or anything even vaguely like a complete novel would be like carrying the architectural plans for a cathedral in your mind, which you can't do. A novel evolves much, much more than a short story. A short story does evolve, but simply because of the length. It's a different thing. It's a different product. It's a different commodity. A short story is a glimpse. Essentially, it's the art of the glimpse. The novel is more of a mixture, more of a, I suppose you could almost say, a rag bag.
Well, William Trevor, thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me.
William Trevor's new novel is called Felicia's Journey. He spoke to us from the NPR Bureau in London. This is Fresh Air.